so much. I don't know my name is Peter. I'm an alcoholic. First off, I feel that I owe the group an amends. I had messed up with my schedule, and as a result, I ended up showing up here late, and that was wrong for you guys, so I wanted to apologize. And if there's anything I can do to make that right by any of you, please come approach me after the meeting and come talk to me. With that, it actually, as I was praying on it, I was thinking that I would like to speak on amends. And with that, I'm actually going to be on page 76 for anybody who would like to follow along, right at the bottom, right after we finish step 7, and then look into steps 8 and 9. And I wanted to start off this way because before I even really read anything, you know, my sponsor has taught me a few things about amends, and one of those things was to avoid using the words "I'm sorry," because coming from me, "I'm sorry" is kind of worthless, right? I've said a lot of "I'm sorry"s throughout my life. I've said I'm sorry" just to get you off of my back. So coming out of my mouth, the words "I'm sorry" doesn't really mean much. So he told me to use words like "I humbly apologize" and you know, things like that, because "I'm sorry" doesn't really mean a lot. But even that, an amend, there's a difference between an amends and an apology. An apology is words, and words are okay, but an amends is action, right? So in order to make an amends, I have to say that I apologize, but I have to then follow that with action. I have to then be willing to show up however you need me to show up, right? And to do whatever is needed of me to make that thing right. And I've had a lot of different amends experiences in my life. And some of those, they ended up being things where I was able to make an amends and talk to that person, and all they wanted me to do was, you know, pay for lunch or just stick around and hang out with them. And one of my best friends today is a guy that I hang out with all the time because I went to go make amends with him, and he said, "Hey, I would just like to hang out and spend more time with you." And today, looking back on it, I never really thought about it until now, but this guy's one of my best friends. You know, and it's been that way for several years, ever since I made amends to him, because I used to be cruel to him when we worked together. I was mean to him, I didn't really like him, and now I love the guy. And that's just one of those gifts that God bestows upon us when I go through this process and do what he's asking me to do. All of a sudden, these incredible things that I could have never planned for myself start manifesting in my life, right? When we read the 12 promises in some meetings, you know, those are really just our 9-step promises. Those are just the promises that we get through the amends making process. I'll say this. I've had some experiences like the one that I just described. I've also had experiences where the person didn't want anything to do with me afterwards. They didn't want to hear from me again. They didn't even really like the fact that I sat down with them. And there was nothing that I could do for them that they felt would make that right. And something that I've been taught and that I've learned is, as long as I made that effort, as long as I showed up and I humbled myself and I did what I could do and gave them that opportunity to get free of me, then I did my part. You see, my sponsor always makes a joke that people in AA are the easiest people to make amends to, because I have to forgive you. Because I do. I can't afford to hold on to that resentment, right? And I've had somebody in AA make amends to me, and it's true. I'm like, I kind of have to forgive her, don't I? But there are people out there who don't have that same gift, if you will. They don't have the 12 steps. They've never been through a program of recovery. They don't live a spiritual way of life. And they may not ever want to forgive me. And in my experience, that's happened one or two times. I had one time in particular where I had harmed a woman, and I had reached out to her to make an amends. And I'll preface this by saying this is one of the most powerful amends experiences I've ever had. It's one where somebody did not forgive me. But I reached out to this woman, and she actually was very hesitant to sit down with me. She said she wanted to talk to her therapist first and this and that. And this is somebody that I didn't meet in the rooms, but who was in the rooms of AA and knew that I was in the rooms of AA. And at the time of this amends, was out and actively struggling. And I went to go make amends to this girl, and I sit down with her in a Starbucks, and I think she even brought somebody else with her who kind of just like stood guard over me. And I sat down, I started talking to her, and I made my amends, and I apologized. You know, I had told a lie about her. And, you know, I apologized, and she started saying to me that We should only make amends when to do so would not harm others, and you're harming me right now by making me live through this again and making me think about this again. And I remember I had prayed a lot beforehand, and I paused for a moment, and I said to her, I didn't want that to be the case. I don't want to be harming you, but I got the sense that I, as a representative of someone in Alcoholics Anonymous, gave you the idea that this is what people in AA are like. And when I had harmed her, it was the previous time I was sober, so I let her know that that way of living didn't work for me, that I was behaving selfishly, that I went out, that now I've gotten sober again, and I'm living this process, and I can't live that way anymore. And I promised her that, A, that's not what living a spiritual life looks like, and it didn't work for me, and B, that I won't ever treat anybody else that way again. And when I said that, because I had a suspicion that maybe I had given her the idea that AA couldn't be a safe place for her because of me, because of people like me, she had said that that was true, that she did feel that way, and that she appreciated me saying that. And I said, is there anything I can do to make this right? And she was like, don't ever talk to me again. And you know what? I didn't. I've never talked to her since then, and I walked out of there feeling like I was floating. I walked out of there feeling closer to God than I ever had before. It was one of the most powerful experiences that I had ever had making an amends, because it was truly humbling. It was truly humbling, and I got to leave there knowing that I did my part, that I did everything in my power to make this thing right, and the rest, the ball's in her court. You see, the way it's always been explained to me is that amends, or yes, I need them and they are for me in the sense that I need them to stay sober, but really it's giving that other person the opportunity to get free of me. It's not an opportunity to reinsert myself back into their life. It's not an opportunity to try to get back into their good graces. At that point, it has nothing to do with me anymore. It's entirely about giving this person the opportunity to get free of me, a person that doesn't have this in their life. 9 times out of 10. A person that doesn't necessarily live a spiritual life, that doesn't have a 4th step or 10th step or a way to get free of all of these resentments that they might be living with that I may have caused. They don't have a way of getting free of that, and they may have been suffering for a long time because of the pain and harm that I caused them, and I'm going to go and give them an opportunity to get free of that. That's what I have to keep in mind when I'm going to make an amends. Because they may never have that opportunity again. They may be okay with it. They may take the opportunity. They may not take it. But it's on me to give them that opportunity. That's what's important. That's what matters. That's how I get free of these things. One last thing I say before I'll read something a little bit is, a wise friend had explained to me once that, you know, we walk into Alcoholics Anonymous full of resentment and fear and all these harms we cause, and every single harm on my harms list, maybe except a few, I feel are fully justified because that person's a jerk and I hate them and they did this, this, and this to me and I hate them. But this guy explained to me that once we come in here, go through the first few steps, we write a 4th step against all these people that I harmed because I hate them and they're terrible and they deserved it, and I get free of these resentments. And all of a sudden, I'm not angry anymore. And that justification for why those people deserved what I did to them is no longer there. And it feels good to be free of those resentments at first, but there's a reason we don't stop at the 5th step. We don't stop at 6 and 7. Because now that I've become free of these resentments, unless I keep moving, all of a sudden, this guilt starts to set in. I'm like, oh my God, they didn't deserve what I did to them. They aren't this terrible person that I made them out to be. And all of a sudden, I have this feeling of remorse. And that's where the amends come in. And he's right. When I thought about it, and I think the reason he had mentioned this to me was because I had just done my 5th step. And I had said to him, I said, wow, man, I'm feeling really guilty for all the things I did. I'm feeling really guilty for the harm that I caused my mother, for the harm that I caused my family, for the harm that I caused all these people out there. And he was like, yeah, man, you just finished the 5th step. Now you start making amends. And amends are there to really give, like I said before, those other people the opportunity to get free of me. But amends begin to alleviate that. They begin to allow me to feel that I can make these things right again, that I can clean up my past. Because when I write a 4-step, I clean up all of the resentments, all of the fear, all of the things that are blocking me. And then when we get to 10 and 11, it says we continue to take personal inventory, you know, cleaning up what's going on in front of us while we clean up the past. That means while we keep making amends. As new resentments pop up, we sweep them away. We keep our side of the street clean. But I do that as I make amends, as I clean up my past, so that I can keep moving forward. So I actually want to start on the paragraph above where I said, on page 76. So right after they said we have then completed step 7. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. And this is one of my favorite lines, cited actually a couple times in the book. Faith without works is dead. And I visualize it. I like to visualize things. I'm a visual person, right? If any of you have heard me share or speak before, I'll typically talk about when I imagine like my connection to the higher power. There's like a beam in my chest. I like visualizing these things, right? So when I think about faith without works is dead, I imagine prayer and meditation and this belief in this power greater than myself. Right, and these are all things that I need, that I can't get sober without, that I wouldn't be here without. However, all of that, without action, is nothing. I actually have written in my book, and this is actually not my original book, this is my second book that I keep in my car, so I have don't have it written here, but I have it written in my book right after Into Action, before working with others, a bunch of arrows that say, all of this work is meaningless if I don't give it away. If I don't take action, if I'm not making amends, if I'm not writing inventory, if I'm not going and helping other people on top of this prayer and meditation, it won't keep me sober. It's not enough. Right? We've got the three sides of the triangle. I need all three. And trust me, in the 5 years that I've been sober, I have made more than my fair share of attempts to do just one or just two. I've mixed them up, too, in case anyone's wondering if maybe two sides will work better than the other two. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Not for me. All right, I've tried mixing it up, just doing service, just praying, just writing inventory, just doing service and writing inventory and not doing morning and nightly. None of it has worked for me. Faith without works is dead, and vice versa, right? Work without faith is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. They talk about it a lot in this chapter and in the previous chapter. We talk about running the show. We give the actor, trying to direct the whole show and play the director as an analogy. And this is all a result of self-will, right? When I talk to my sponsees, and we're a little bit earlier in the book, and I try to show them in their own lives with their own experience where self-will has guided them wrong, I'll explain to them, you know, I'll say, where has your best thinking brought you? In the best it's ever done, it brought you right here, sitting in this meeting. And I'm sure you've seen the worst it's ever brought us, right? And I could very easily walk out of here and never come back. So not only does self-will bring me to all these terrible places, but then when I look at my inventory, I can see all the damage that self-will causes to not only myself, but to all the other people around me. Right? The alcoholic is like a tornado. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. My sponsor always highlights that and how wonderful this program is and how wonderful God is, that if I'm not willing, I can pray for the willingness. I mean, that's awesome. For a guy like me, that's great, because I always have some way that I'll find in the back of my head that I can mess this up, right? So even if I'm not willing to do this, because many of us are not. I know when I came in here, I was very hesitant to make amends, and I have a lot of sponsees. As a matter of fact, I would say 90% of sponsees that I've worked with, the one thing they're like, Peter, I can't make amends. They're on step one, but they'll be like, I cannot make these amends. I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm never going to be able to face all of these people and apologize. And what I tell them is, we pray for the willingness until it comes, right? And I also preface that, you know, you're on step one, buddy. We got a long way to go. By the time you get to step 9, you'll be all right. You'll be ready. Because I firmly believe that each step prepares me for the next. I won't be ready to sponsor a guy when I'm on step 3. But I will be ready when I'm on step 11, going into step 12. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Drat. I forgot about that. My third step decision. And they like to throw that back at me too. When we made that third step decision, that decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him, and I got on my knees and I made that decision, I agreed that I would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So if I meant that third step decision, then that means going and knocking on doors and facing people that I don't want to face. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At this moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and to the people about us. And something I like to say about this is that it's telling me I don't necessarily need to go up to somebody and say, I'm now living a spiritual life. I've come to you as a man of God. I would like to humbly beg for your forgiveness as I, you know, pray for you later on. You know, they say it might prejudice people, right? Because we can talk like that in AA, and I can talk like that with, you know, people that I'm close with. But there are plenty of people that already don't like me that I'm going to apologize to. And if I go there necessarily and start talking about how I'm a man of God now, it might prejudice them. It might make them think, oh, great, you know, this guy's going religious. He's going crazy on me, right? You know, all of us know the reality of that situation, but when I walk up to some people, and I'm sure everybody in this room knows somebody where if I walked up to them like that, they'd look at me like I was nuts, right? And they're saying, no, we don't have to do that. But, and later on it's going to get to this, we shouldn't be scared to touch on it either. I shouldn't be afraid to tell somebody what did this for me, how I got here, what happened. But if I don't need to touch on it, then I don't need to touch on it, right? This is about, like I said before, giving that person the opportunity to get free of me. It's not about getting them to believe one thing or another. But if they're willing to hear it, by all means, I might just be saving that person's life. I don't know where that girl is today. I don't know if she ended up ever making her way back to a meeting, but I hope one day she does. And I hope, that any damage that I did to that idea that she had of AA, I hope that I was able to reverse that damage and allow her to be able to look at this place and say, one day I can come back there. And I've seen it happen to many people. I've seen it happen to a lot of people where they come into a meeting and they just get set up with the wrong person. And that gives them that idea of Alcoholics Anonymous where they don't want to go back. And I think about myself too, and one of the only reasons that I did come back to Alcoholics Anonymous was because when I was on my way out the first time that I came here, I saw some people really get this thing. I saw a sponsee brother of mine who came in here sicker than me, and I loved it. I loved him at the time because I was a sick, untreated alcoholic, and this guy was just like me except worse, and I got along with him great. And I was sober about 7 months. And at that time, I was itching to go back out. My girlfriend at the time had broken up with me. I was miserable. I was like, the only way out is through getting drunk. And I remember turning and looking at this guy in a meeting right before that. And he was talking. This is a guy who's a vehement atheist, right? He would start arguments with people over God and tell people how ridiculous their beliefs were. And he was rude. And I thought it was funny, but, you know, he was rude and all this stuff. And he was walking into this meeting one day and started sharing about having a spiritual experience, how the obsession to drink and drug had been removed from him. And I was floored. And I knew I didn't have a bunk sponsor because we had the same sponsor. So I was like, man, I must have done something wrong. I must have not done something that he did. That enabled me to come back. That thought never left my head. Even if I wasn't actively thinking about it, that never left my head. When I thought about AA, I said, I know this works. I didn't do it right. I know this works. I left something out. And that was big for me. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to right the wrong. He's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. I find it interesting that they talk about this, because when I think a lot of people come in here, but I can only speak for myself, but when I come in here, I imagine amends as me crawling up to the doorway of everybody that I ever hurt and begging them oh, please, please forgive me, and kissing their feet, right? But we're going to get down to the bottom of the page and they're going to say, we kneel before no one. We kneel before no one but God, right? This isn't about crawling or groveling or anything like that, because we don't do that, right? That's not being of service to anybody. Leading with the chin, right? Why put myself in a position to be labeled a fanatic or religious bore and this and that, right? I don't need to do that. It would only make the experience worse, right? If I go in there with a sincere desire to right the wrong, that's what's going to impress. And it doesn't matter if it really makes this man think more of me or less of me or whatever, but I'll go in there and I'll be carrying these principles when I do that. And that'll let that person know that, you know what, even if he hates me, even if he doesn't want to talk to me, at least he knows that I'm not behaving that way anymore. And that nobody else is going to have to go what he went through at the hands of me, at the very least. He is going to be more... Oh, I already read that. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Now, I just want to stop here, because this is what I mentioned earlier. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God, right? So, there's a little bit of back and forth here, right? We don't go in there and just start preaching and start telling this person, oh, I found the Lord and this and that, but we don't shy away from it, right? I don't be afraid to tell this person who did this for me, what did this for me, what got me here today, because I can tell you from my experience, people do ask. People who knew me before I came in here and then saw me now, they ask, they want to know, because those are two polar opposites. People who knew me before, it's funny because I don't necessarily hang out with a ton of people that I used to drink and drug around, but I do hang out with a few, right? And they'll tell me to this day, which sometimes I forget, but it's night and day. I'm a completely different person. I was unable to be relied upon. I was unable to be trusted. You couldn't tell me any secrets. You couldn't leave your girlfriend alone around me, let alone, you know, confide in me. Right? I would steal things from you and help you look for it. People didn't like me. I was a jerk. So this giant, vast change to somebody who's coming and not only apologizing, but willing to take action on that behalf, people often do ask and they do want to know. And now I have an opportunity to be of service. And it's amazing how many ninth step amends turn into 12 step calls. I'm going to share a story that is not my own. It's from a friend of mine, but I think it's so powerful that it's worth sharing anyway. A friend of mine owed an amends to somebody he got into a fist fight with. Now, this person was from, you know, another town, and he had an older brother, and I think they all lived with their father. And the kid that he owed amends to died in a drunk driving accident before my friend got sober. So my friend was looking for ways to make amends to him. And you can feel it. You can feel it when the amends is done and when it's not. You know, God has a way of working like that, where I can feel it in my spirit, in my gut, that this amends is done, or I haven't done enough. And he tried a few different things. He tried writing a letter and burning it. He tried, you know, going and helping all this kid's friends get sober. He tried going to visit the grave, I think, by himself. And all of those things, it was not enough. It was not enough. I think he tried donating money. It was not enough. He still felt it in his spirit that something was missing. And I remember while this was going on, he said, I think I found another way that I'm going to go try to do. I'm going to go talk to the kid's brother, have him bring me to the grave, and read my amends to the brother. Because he knew the older brother too, and while he hadn't harmed the older brother, that was his living relative. So he went to go do this. And he came back and told me the results, and it blew me away. He goes there, and starts talking with the brother and starts making his amends, and the brother starts breaking down. And he tells my friend that he's a heroin addict, that he's been struggling with addiction for a really, really long time. He starts telling my friend that, you know, his father then died too at his own hands because they both got addicted to heroin, and he introduced his father to injecting it and ended up pushing the plunger on the needle that ended his life, right? I mean, this guy was an absolute emotional wreck. And he says to my friend, he's like, "You're sober now? This is the life you're leading now?" He's like, "How can I get that?" And all of a sudden, the ninth step turned into a 12-step call. And now he's being of service to this older brother and helping him get into detox and helping him get sober, right? And that was when he knew that the amends was made. There, that was when he knew it was done. And that was what God was trying to push him towards, right? Every time he had that feeling of this isn't done, that was God trying to say, there's a person out there related to this man who needs your help, where you're going to be the one who's able to help him. Because a lot of the time, I don't realize this, but, you know, not to toot my own horn, because this is each and every one of us, but a lot of the people that I sit down with, and I may read with or do whatever, they may relate to me in a way that they don't relate to anybody else, right? Each and every one of us are uniquely qualified to help alcoholics, yes, but beyond that, each and every one of us have certain people who relate to us when they may not have related to anybody else. And that's something I gotta remember when I sit down. It's like, I may be this guy's only opportunity. Now, that doesn't mean I have to, you know, try to force anything or do anything like that. He has his own free will. He's gonna make his decisions, right? But when we get into 12, that's when I owe this to these people to give this back just as freely as it was given to me. But that's 12, and I don't wanna get too much further into that. What I did want to say, though, was that this was like, this story floored me. I remember hearing this, and I wish I could say that brother was sober today. To be honest, I don't know, but I remember at the time, shortly after, he kind of fell off the map and disappeared, and I don't know where he's at today. I pray for the guy. I hope he is sober today. But as far as I know, he's still alive, thank God. But that was just one example of how amends can turn into 12-step calls. And I've had all sorts of interesting amends experiences. You know, I've had experiences with amends that I make right then and there, and they're super easy. And I'll tell you what, those really easy ones are usually the ones that I kind of like, meh. You know, I feel like I got to go do another one. My sponsor always says amends are the best drug I'll ever do. And it's true. It really is. It's like a spiritual drug in a way. I get this spiritual high right after I go and make these amends. And I find the super easy ones, while I have to do them and they're really important, I find the ones where I go there and the person's like, "Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, that was great, but I wasn't even mad at you. You know, we're good, whatever. You're an awesome guy. Thanks." You know, those ones don't really do nearly as much for me as the person who, you know, chews me out and they're like, "You MF for this and that and blah, blah, blah." And then I'm able to make that right. For some reason, whatever it is, that always ends up doing more than me. And I think because it's more humbling. And the more humility that I'm getting out of this, the better it is for my spirit. But my sponsor did this with me, and so I do it with my sponsees, where when we make our 8-step list, right, as the book said, it's already written in our 4 steps, so we just take it out, and I have them organize it into 3 columns. Amends that I'm willing to make right now, amends that I'm willing to make soon, but not just yet, and amends that I'm willing to make later/never. Right, the ones that I'm just unwilling to make. And then I tell them, now you have to go do one from the easy column. And once they come back, I'm like, okay, now you have to go do one from the soon column now. And then they come back from that, and I say, okay, now you got to do one from the later/never column. Right? The point of the list wasn't really to actually have them do it later/never, but it was really just to go one out of those 3 columns. Right? You're going to do one of each of these columns and realize that those ones that I'm not so willing to make, that with prayer and when I go and sit down and do it, those are typically the most powerful ones, the ones that I wasn't so willing to make. So after I have them organize their list like that, I'll usually have them do one from each of those columns, and then we'll start doing 10 and 11 as they continue to make the rest of them. I'm trying to just see which line may have done us more harm. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helping and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. You know, I kind of forgot that the book actually said what I was just talking about, how when I go to an enemy, it's a lot more beneficial to me than when I go to a friend. Because going to a friend is easy. Like, I've had tons of experiences where I made amends to a friend, and if I'm going to be honest, I've had some... I can be a little bit forgetful, and I had a friend that makes fun of me all the time now, because apparently I've made the same amends to him 3 times. And I guess I kept forgetting to cross him off my list. So the first time I did it, I was, you know, sober, and then I went out, and I guess I forgot to cross him off my list, so I went and did it again. And he was like, hey man, you already made amends, but that's okay, you know, cool. And I guess the third time, I don't know what the heck happened. I don't really remember this, but he swears it was 3 times. And now every time I reach out to him to hang out, he was like, hey, you're going to try to pay me again? Because you already paid me what you owed me. We're good, man. And something that I kind of like, but throughout my old group of friends, they now have an ongoing joke that I'm going to try to hunt them down and pay them all money. Right? They're all under the impression that, you know, I'm going to try to pay them money that they don't think I even owe them. But the thing is, if I took money, I have to pay that back. I have to pay that back for me. I mean, I've had friends who are like, dude, I don't even know, I don't remember you even taking that. I'm like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I owe this money. And if they really refuse it and they really won't take it, that's fine. There are other ways to do it. Getting into financial amends on the subject of money, there are a lot of institutions that I caused harm to that I stole from. You know, the Acme in my town, right? That used to be my free drug hub. Right, because not the fun drugs, might I add, but you know, I would go there and steal Robitussin and go and drink the cough syrup and steal whatever I wanted to get because it was, you know, free, 5-finger discount. And I owed a lot of money to that Acme. Or it was an A&P at the time, and what happened was it got bought out by Acme. And I asked my sponsor, I'm like, well, what do? I didn't do anything to Acme. But it's the same store, and it's the same money, and my sponsor was like, you go there and you tell the manager and you make an amends. And so I did that. I walked in there and I told the manager, and I made an amends, and they didn't want my money. They were like, we don't have a way for you to pay us that money. It's good. Consider it forgiven. And I called my sponsor, and I was like, no, I have to pay them that money. This is not my money. And he said, here's what you're going to go do. You're going to go in there. You're going to buy a gift card for the amount of money that you owe, and you're going to shop it up, and you're never going to spend that money on that gift card. And I can't give it away because then somebody else is spending the money, so I just got to chop it up. Now the money is theirs. They have it. And I did that with the CVS, too. Same deal. I went in there. I went in. I chopped up the gift card. I've heard some places have these donation things, I guess, that you can make to them for, I don't know, maybe they got the idea that enough alcoholics were going and making amends to them, but they're like, this is ridiculous. We need to just set up a thing for them because they're not going to leave us alone. But I have heard something about these, oh, you can make a donation to this thing, but none of them I was ever able to get in contact with, so I just did my gift card trick and moved on. But let's say that I couldn't do that. Let's say that I owed somebody money who absolutely would not let me pay them, and there was no other place I could do. Well, at that point, I could start donating that money to causes, because as far as I've been taught, and as far as I've come to understand, that money that I owe is not my money. All my money is God's money. But that money that I owe is extra, not my money. I have no business having that money because it's not mine and it needs to go somewhere else. And that's for me. Personally, that's been my experience. So if I can't put that on the gift card, then I need to donate it, then I need to spend it helping God's children. I need to do something with it because I cannot spend that money on myself because it's not my money. It's not mine. We go to Him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are here to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our matter is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. And this is basically our directions on how to make an amends right here, right? It's pretty vague, but still straightforward. It tells me exactly what I do. We don't criticize this person. They could have harmed me 10 times more than I harmed them. That's irrelevant. I forget what speaker tape I was listening to. I think it was Sandy Beach's, but maybe not. But somebody had harmed him and his family very dearly, and they were in prison. He had spoke about how he went to go make amends to this man in prison for holding hatred for him in his heart. And he went into that prison and he said, I forgive you for what you've done. It's not okay. I'm not going to let you around my family. I'm never going to talk to you again. I believe you deserve to be in this spot where you're at. But I want to apologize for holding hate for you in my heart, and I forgive you. That's the kind of level that I want to be at. Because if I'm being honest, that's not me right now. I don't think I could go and do that. That's just the truth. But that's where I want to be. You know, I think I was here, actually, and Barefoot Bill was speaking. And I remember he said, true love, the level of forgiveness, and the level that we're talking about when we're thinking of God, is to imagine that God would let even Hitler into heaven. And I was like, nah, I'm not there, man, but I bless you, bless your heart, you know? But I understand the principle and what he's talking about in that forgiveness, because I have to have that forgiveness. I have to have that forgiveness for other people, just as I have to seek it from them. So they can harm me 10 times over, but if I've done my fourth and fifth step right, I know that I have to forgive them in order to get free, and that I can't go in there and start mentioning what they did. And I'll tell the story of an ex-girlfriend of mine who I hated. Me and her were together for my first time ever really being sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. She was a girl that outside of AA. And we were together, and when I went back out, it was, you know, right after we broke up. I hated her. I felt she did me so wrong and that I was perfect and good to her. Now, the truth was, I was an untreated alcoholic for the entire relationship, so you can imagine how horrible I was, how miserable I was, how anxious and uneasy I was the whole time. First of all, the idea of her drinking or getting high or doing anything drove me insane, because obviously I was dying to do that as well. So, like, that was, like, something that I was always trying to shut down. I mean, I was a miserable, miserable jerk, but I couldn't see any of that. And all I saw was a girl who had did me dirty, and I didn't like that. And I had the hardest time forgiving her, but eventually I had to go and make amends to her for the harms that I had done to her. And now the way I saw it, she did definitely do some harms by me. And I had no idea how I was going to just not mention those. But my sponsor told me this part in the book: under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. They can tell me things that I did that aren't true. I'm not going to argue with them. I can't, because that's not how this process works for me. I can't sit there and argue with them and say, no, well, wait a minute. Now, that doesn't mean somebody could just say, well, you know, you broke my heart, so you owe me $100,000, right? That's not how that works. We don't grovel. We don't crawl before anybody. But that being said, I'm also not here to argue or mention any of the wrongs they did. And I went up before this girl, and I mentioned my wrongs and only my wrongs. And you know what happened? She made an amends, too. She's not in the program, but she started apologizing for the things that she did. And I didn't mention any of them. She said what she was sorry for, and you know what? She just about covered it. I didn't need to mention any of those things. And you know what? She may not have made that amends, and it still wouldn't have mattered. I still don't get to mention those things to her, because I would then be ruining my own experience here. Right? I'm going in here and having this powerful and deep spiritual experience. When I do that, I'm ruining it. It would be as if I sponsored a guy and, you know, then asked him to pay me for it. It would completely take away from the entire experience. You know, all of a sudden this thing that is bringing me closer to God would cease in its tracks. And I don't want to do that. Today I don't want that, right? Because I want to have that spiritual value is much more important than any revenge or any ha-ha I told you so that I could have ever gotten. And it's ironic, because those ha-ha I told you so's are what I used to live for. That was all I had. I think one last thing that I wanted to touch on, or one of the last-ish things, because I don't know if you guys have been able to tell, but I can really just kind of talk and talk. But one last thing I definitely wanted to touch on is, you know, it says here, simply we tell them that we'll never get over our drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. I had some experience with this that I find is not mentioned in the book, but I like to talk about it. I've had a lot of people outside of AA that I believe are under the impression that kind of, they don't view amends as something as fondly as maybe we do. I've had a lot of people come up to me and they don't want to hear an amends from me, even though they're not mad at me, because they believe I'm only doing it for myself. They believe I'm only doing it so that I don't drink and that I don't care about them or anything like that, but I'm doing it because I have to, because some guy with a book told me to, and that I'm not going to be able to stop drinking, that I'm doing it for me. And in part, that is true. I am doing it so that I don't drink, But only in the sense that people say this is a selfish program, right? It's a selfless program, but I am doing it for me. But I even had an aunt of mine who I was going to make amends to, and I ended up having to postpone because I was going out to go visit her and my uncle to go make an amends to them. And she actually texted my mom, and she was like, "Hey, is Peter really coming out here so he can make some amends to us? You know, because if so, I don't want that. I don't want him to just visit us for that." And you know what? I realized right then and there, I was like, I can't go out there and make this amends. I need to go and just visit them just to be with them. Not for any other reason than to just spend time with my family. And I need to go do it a few times before I can make any amends to them. Because otherwise it's just going to cause harm. And I can't be making amends when to do so would harm them or others. Also note in there, it does not say harm me. I'd like to point that out. If there's risk of me getting beat up, I do have to take that. And that kind of really shocked me because I never realized that. And I've actually talked to a bunch of normie alien people, and they've kind of represented that sentiment, you know, where they were under the impression that I'm really only going there to make amends to them for me. You know, so I find it really important to make clear that I'm here for them. I'm here because I did wrong by you, and I want you to have the opportunity to get what you need from me, if I can provide that, to make that right by you, to help you not have to deal with that, think about that, live with that anymore. And whatever I can do, I'm here for it, right? And obviously, in my experience, if there's extenuating circumstances, like our $100,000 example, my sponsor, I asked him, I'm like, well, what do I do if that happens? He was like, you just step out and call me. And I'll tell you what, I haven't had that happen. I haven't had anybody ask for anything unreasonable. It's not to say people won't, but it just hasn't happened to me. But I do feel that I need to stress that, and that it's important to stress that, because apparently people out there do have this idea that it's just for me. And you see it on TV, too. I remember thinking about an episode of Malcolm in the Middle where one of the neighbors goes over and rings the doorbell, and the wife answers the door. I don't remember any of their names, but the woman at the door is like, "Hi, I'm an alcoholic, I'm in AA, I have to make amends, but..." And, you know, I made out with your husband on New Year's Eve and just figured I'd apologize for it. All right, take care. I think people have that idea about amends, and I'm thinking, I'm like, that's not what we do. We're not supposed to do that, right? That'd be causing much more harm. It's not the proper, You know, whenever I see AA on TV, I'll tell you, it drives me crazy because I always want to nitpick. And that's my ego, but I think people do have that idea about it, so because of that, I feel the need to stress. I'm like, this is for whatever you need from me. If you don't want to forgive me, that's okay. If you don't want to listen to me, that's okay. I'm going to go to any length to make sure that I've done everything I can to try to deliver that to this person and give them that opportunity. And if they don't want it, it's hands off. If a person refuses to meet with me, right, I don't harass them. But I've tried maybe on a few separate occasions. I've tried to do other things to maybe kind of reach out and give them a little something. If they've shut down every request, then that'll get made on God's time, right? God is telling me that I've done my part right there. And that amends is, I'm hesitant to say as good as done, but it is as good as done. Until that later opportunity, if it presents itself, that God decides it's time to make that amends. And I'll tell you what, that does happen. You know, for me, I have had people who've avoided me. I have had a couple different people where I've reached out to them on different occasions and they said yes, and then something happened, and then years later I still haven't had the opportunity to make those amends. And I stay ready, and the book tells me I need to stay ready to make that amends. But as far as the book has told me, as far as my sponsor has told me, as far as I can feel in my spirit, that amends is as good as done. I did my part. I don't need to lose sleep at night over those people who wouldn't sit down with me, who wouldn't meet with me, as long as I stay ready to provide them the opportunity to get free of me and what I did to them. And I do have to remind myself that this is not an opportunity to reinsert myself into this person's life. Now, especially if it's somebody that I liked, it's somebody that I missed, it's somebody that I wanted to spend more time with. That's not what this is about. If that's what they want, then by all means, but that's not what this is about. And the last thing that I'll touch on, because I've got 3 minutes and then I'm going to open it up, is some of the living amends that I've had to do. You know, like I had mentioned before, one of my best friends today is a guy that I had really just kind of bullied when I worked with him. I was 18, And I was working at a job, and I was, you know, doing drugs and drinking with everybody who worked there. And this guy was one of the guys who was there, and we gave him nasty nicknames, and we were all mean to him. And he would come hang out with us sometimes, but I didn't really like him. I thought he was annoying. And I would just torment him for no reason because of it. And so did a lot of other people. And he wasn't even a bad guy. I don't know why back then I thought he was, but he wasn't really that bad. But for some reason, he just rubbed me the wrong way, and I was a force to be reckoned with, and I was an evil person. So I was just, you know, be mean to the guy for no reason. And I decided to go and make amends to that guy. And I think we had maybe since then, because I hadn't seen him in a while, but I think we had maybe played video games together like once or twice. I like playing video games. So I reached out to him. I said, hey, can I, you know, sit down and talk to you, whatever. And I'm making this amends. And he says to me, he was like, I appreciate that. That means a lot. You know, you definitely did do some hurtful things. But, you know, I always, you know, considered us friends. I always liked you. And all I really want is, you know, just play some video games with me more. So I was like, okay, sure. And I kind of didn't even think about it until recently, but that's been years since I made that amends, probably like 4 or 5 years since I made that amends. And I play video games with this kid every night. Now we go out, you know, when it's on my birthday, he'll bring me out to go have a cigar. I hang out with this kid all the time. He's one of my closest friends now. And I never even really thought about it until I started talking here, but he'll even mention it. I'm like, hey, man, like, how did we get to, you know, be friends like this? And he was like, yeah, so you came over to apologize, remember? And I was like, oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, it was. Like, what a gift. What a cool gift. Like, I can't imagine why I ever, you know, didn't like this guy. He's a super cool guy. And it just goes to show that, like, I have such a warped perception on reality that those old ideas, I try to bring them with me without even realizing that I'm trying to bring them with me. These perceptions of people that I loathed my entire life, a lot of them are total crap, right? They're not real. It's based on, you know, my ego or my pride or all this self-will and stuff that I walked around with while I was an active or alcoholic or an untreated alcoholic. And I look back on it, and when I get to know some of these people for real, I realize that was all delusion. It was all lies. They're old ideas that managed to bring their way with me into sobriety. So I'm constantly having new experiences with these every day. And I'm constantly having new experiences with amends, and I hope that I continue to have new experiences with amends. I'd like to say, right before I finish up, that it was an honor to come speak here. Thank you, Anita, for coming and asking me. And this is a meeting that has a special place in my heart. This is where I came to get sober. You know, Rich came up to me and Patty Ellen came up to me and they said, hey, kid, do you need a home group? I had 2 days sober. And you guys came up to me and offered me, said, hey, why don't you take a coffee commitment? And I said, okay. And I joined this group and I was here and you guys were there for all of that. So I just want to say thank you. It's a true honor to be sitting here today, 5 years later. And I am so, so sorry about my scheduling misstep, and if there's anything I can do to make that right, please let me know. Thank you for letting me share.